Yes, it must be October. It must be just about a week or so from Halloween. It must be into the paranormal. That means I am Jeremy Scott, somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you back with us. Since it is the haunted season, the Halloween season, the spookiest time of the year, my favorite time of the year, and I've got a brand new catalog next to me that I'm really digging into, which deals with a lot of the haunted locations around British Columbia, but also around Canada, which means I had to have back the Haunted History BC sisters, Gina Armstrong and Victoria Vancic, who are sisters and share a passion for ghosts. Is that right?
That is. Hello.
That's
hey, great to be back, too.
Welcome back. How have you both been?
Thanks.
You've been busy creating calendars, magazines, putting your great artwork and haunted histories into print. So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. That's great. I know. We're all excited to be here.
What about the history, the haunted history, the ghosts, has you really hooked? Got you hooked, I guess, is a better way of saying it. What got you hooked?
I just think it's probably first started off with the history part, and then went to the haunted part. So yeah, just every time we looked into the history of a place, we always came across really good ghost stories or legends, or people would tell us things about experiences, and then we started looking for those things ourselves.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think our love for ghosts too, because even as kids, when we were young, we were always fascinated by it. And we always liked haunted places and haunted houses and just check things out all the time. But it wasn't until about like in 2019, when we were just getting really into it and we were purposely looking for locations and sites that maybe were supposedly haunted.
Yes.
And it all came up probably around when of course, like even last year and the year before, when people started telling us about locations, and we were like, okay, cool, we're going to check it out. We're a little bit hardline skeptics sometimes, but when we go into places, I tell you, it just freaks us out. We've had some pretty good experiences for sure.
We definitely have, yeah. And it's always fascinating because then once you get that experience, you're kind of looking for it all over again.
Oh, really? So you go back for more?
Well, maybe go back for more at the location, or then you want to be able to experience those things again. Like you want to, the first time you get an EVP, well, you want another, you want to get another EVP. And so for people who don't know, it's electronic voice phenomenon, and that's mm-hmm. what you capture on, the digital recorder. So if you get a ghostly voice, then you kind of want to have that again.
You guys have said so much that we could just pick apart all night here. I believe it was Gina who said good ghost stories. So what makes a good ghost story?
Oh, I think when you have all the elements, you have maybe a tragic death, a bit of scandal in there. You've got something maybe borderline, creepy, horrific that happened, or, just something like that. Something mysterious, unknown, and then all of a sudden, you have a haunting.
Maybe something with a mysterious element, like a true crime element or something like that, too?
Oh, yeah.
Totally, yeah.
And you say a love of ghosts, so you've never been really freaked out by them, or have you?
Oh, we have, in fact, but we just love it. We love the fact that we get freaked out.
I love that.
Earlier on the show, Gina, when you were just logging in, it was so funny because I was telling Jeremy that we actually go as far as picking a day and like around 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night, and we listen to his podcasts. And then sometimes we like pick out other people's podcasts, and then we just like listen and freak each other out. We love it.
Then you can't sleep, right? That, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of addicting. You freak out and then you love it.
Mm-hmm. There is something about that late night hour, though, and especially this time of the year, right? Which I don't know about you ladies, where you're up there in British Columbia, right?
Yeah, I'm in Maple Ridge, BC. So just maybe about 45 to an hour outside of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in Pitt Meadows too, and that's probably about 30 minutes, 40 minutes away from Vancouver as well. But I'm in the heart of the Bigfoot country.
Ooh, yeah. So you have not only ghosts but cryptid encounters. All right, we'll come back to that. I don't know, is the weather changing up there? Because it certainly has finally started to change down here in the Pacific Northwest after a geoengineered 85-degree weekend. We've had a geoengineered month of October down here. It's finally starting to cool down. And the fog starting to come in at night, and you're having to close the windows now, turn off the fans, put on another layer, and that just gives these spooky stories a whole nother layer.
It does. Yeah, we're finally getting there. We've had really hot weather, too, oddly, for October, so we're kind of waiting for the fall to kick in. So, yeah, the fog definitely helps.
Changing. Yeah, the leaves are changing, and we've got definitely a lot of misty, foggy days as well. So, and it is a little chilly in the morning. So definitely, yeah, you can feel the spooky season is just right around the corner.
Now, when you guys say you're purposely looking for haunted locations, what is your purpose of going there?
Well, we definitely want to also document things. So, I mean, that's kind of the whole purpose of us looking into all throughout British Columbia. Areas that might have the potential for, you know, being haunted, or people who tell us stories about like the legends and possibly, you know, something might have happened in that area, whether it's a cemetery or building. But for us, yeah, it's we seek those things out because most people always focus on the downtown area, which is Vancouver. That's our big major city there. But I mean, you don't have to be just in Vancouver to find something that's a little spooky. It can be even on the outskirts.
It can be, yeah. And a lot of places, if they weren't documented, we like to make sure we record those stories just for the historical part, because that part's also very interesting, and, you know, along with the ghost story. And sometimes it just lets us fill in the blanks for a specific history of a location. So you can fill in the blanks of what happened to people or who was in that location, who lived there. And that's always fascinating stuff.
I would gather today in 2022, it's a whole lot easier for history and research to be done on this topic than, say, it was 20 or 30 years ago, really pre-internet or pre-major databases on the internet. Have you guys found that the internet has been really helpful in tracking down the history for you?
Yeah, a little bit, I would say, but we try not to do too much research beforehand. So, and certainly it's always nice to sort of follow up afterwards. Like if we experience anything, it is nice to go, you know, online afterwards to see if anybody else has experienced similar things. And then you sort of see a pattern with some places, like if they have hauntings that people have, you know, reported in the past or whatever, you know, the bit has been said about the place. So it is very helpful to have that. But we do try to steer clear of some of the stuff on the internet, just so that we go in with sort of our own experience.
Just one add to that is just mention that when we do go to a location that doesn't have a lot of information, but when we do come across something, that's even more exciting for us. I would say that's like a real gold mine, because it's something fresh. We might, you know, document something, and that's kind of one of our goals, is just to make sure that we document the history, but also if there's any legends or folklore involved in there, we like to actually include that as well.
You say document the history, are you doing interviews with those who have lived it, or ancestors of those, or how do you go about I guess documenting that and then also verifying it?
Yeah, sometimes it's people who have visited there. Sometimes it's people who are the caretakers or own the place, or, you know, just anybody who's, you know, had their just an experience there. So sometimes, you know, people reach out to us and say, oh, I was at this place. And that's the best part, is when people reach out to us on either social media or through email and say, oh, by the way, I was at this location and had a really cool experience happen, or a really cool ghost story. I think I saw a ghost, or this is what happened. So then, you know, just it kind of opens up, like once you kind of crack open the can of worms, it seems like things sort of just unfold a lot of times for us. So that's always been really great too. Like you don't have to, you know, look around too long or too hard, but then things just start coming your way. So
What are each of your favorites of all the locations you've been to? And it could be for any reason you pick this. It could be because maybe you've experienced something personally there, because you're fascinated by the history, because you took a really cool photo, or whatever it may be. Gina, go first.
I will have to say, most recently, I'm just going to pick this because it was recent. It was the Old Dominion building in downtown Vancouver. So we went there, and why that experience was so great is because we heard that it was haunted, We know some people who have office buildings there, and they said one day, just why don't you guys come out and investigate the whole building? It's closed on a Sunday. We're going to go out. And we did. And the best part was that we actually witnessed and had things happen with people who do not ghost hunt, didn't know about what ghost hunting was all about, had nothing to do with the paranormal. So it was great to witness it all together, because I think that then, you know, just made it all the more sort of real for all of us. Like, you can actually see what people do and how things play out in just a typical ghost hunt. And that was, it doesn't always go like that, because sometimes you can, you know, you get things where nothing happens or very little happens. And then other times you get a lot of activity. But in this particular case, we got a lot of activity on cue and with all of our ghost equipment, which was amazing. So we didn't know what to expect. We just came out of there thinking, oh my goodness, this place is incredible, because it was just such an incredible group experience.
And Victoria, what would yours go down as?
I probably would say one of the more recent ones was an old mansion. It's called the Overland Manor. And we went over there, and I have to say, it was like one after another. It was like it was just amazing. It was like you're watching a movie and it was all unfolding at that time. We arrived at the mansion. We were supposed to meet up with someone. And Gina said, well, okay, she thought she saw someone in the building. So we thought, okay, great. They must be waiting for us. And then obviously while we were parking, we also thought we heard noises too. Somebody maybe like in one of the buildings with the windows open. And it turned out that nobody was in the building. We actually had to call someone who had to come in and open the door for us.
And he wasn't even there yet.
No, I know. It was just the craziest thing. So we were so certain that there was somebody there, because when Gina looked through the window, she took some photos because she's like, oh my God, she's like telling me that, oh, look at the beautiful building in there. Like there's lots of, you know, nice architecture inside. So we thought this is great. But then as we were like swiping through and looking through all the different pictures she took, we actually saw like there was a bit of a silhouette of a man in there. So we thought that, well, that's really odd, but nobody was in there. So we thought we just would blow it off. We were going through the building then. We spent about a couple hours there. And I think for me, the more profound area was when we were going through the hallway, and I thought I kept seeing something fly around me. And I thought maybe it was a speck of dust because it was sunny that day. It was coming, like the sunshine was coming through the windows. And I thought maybe it was like an insect or dust or something. But no, it was, I think what I was seeing was seeing an orb. We had pictures as well. And Gina took some photos of me too, when I was taking photos of the fixtures and the architecture there. And then Gina happened to notice that, what's this orb that seems to be always up above you? And then the most wild thing was, there was like sort of a chair kind of in front of me.
Window. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I didn't even pay attention to it, but Gina's like taking pictures. And then she's like, wait, it looks like there's like a little girl, a young girl sitting there in period clothing. And I thought, what the heck's going on there? So it's very obvious too. It looks like a little girl sitting there, and it's like in a form of a mist.
Yeah. It's a misty thing, but you can sort of see like a human figure and stuff. Yeah. That was a really interesting place.
It was like one after another. And then we thought we saw shadow people too as well there. We weren't too sure, but Gina took a photo, and we still can't quite make out what it is that we saw down the hallway, but it certainly does look very like a human, let's put it that way. So
yeah.
So you've been able to capture things sometimes in the moment, sometimes after the fact, sometimes you see or hear it but you don't capture it. What is some of the best evidence though that you have captured on tape?
I think just recently there was a couple of EVPs when we were in that building downtown, the Dominion building. We heard, you know, we were kind of walking around and we were asking the questions and everything. Then we played it back sort of on the spot, and there was like laughter of kids in the background, and there were no kids in the building. And then there was like a woman saying hi or hello or something like that. So I would say something like that can't be really easily explained. Like, I think with photos, when you can't take photos, you can always try to explain it away. There might be something like, you might catch like a ball of light or a mist, but you try to kind of explain it away, like it's the lens or the light or the trick of the eye or something. But I think when you get like the audible type evidence, it's kind of, that's where it gets kind of shocking, because like, you know who's in the room, and if you hear like a voice that wasn't supposed to be there or a noise that wasn't supposed to be there, then you start to kind of think like, oh, what is that? Because that's not really easily explained away.
Oh, and Gina, and remember when we were doing that, when we were actually running all our equipment, everything was being hit, like it was all on cue.
All at the same time, in the same location. Yeah. So we would move the equipment, like the REM pod, we'd have the EMF meter, we'd kind of move it down the hall or by the staircase, and like all of them would go off. Like the REM pod would go off and start to, you know, make noise, and then the EMF meters would start to, you know, light up and everything, and then the voices would through the ghost box would start to come in. And so it wasn't like just one piece of equipment where you could just say, oh yeah, just something moved or something knocked it, you know, but it was all of it kind of at once, which was amazing.
And we had witnesses. We had so many people around us there as well. That was the beauty of it all.
Yeah, the people who had their offices, well, they had no idea. And so, you know, they were
their jaws were dropping. I know, I remember that.
They were taking video themselves, so which is kind of cool, because they're going to come out with like a YouTube thing, and and our ghost hunt there is going to be like their very first video, so which is kind of going to be really cool, because I kind of want to look back on it now. Sometimes when you're in the moment, you're not really appreciating all that's going on, because you're like busy with equipment, you're looking at your camera, you're taking pictures and all the rest of it, but I kind of want to see it after it actually happens. It's going to be kind of cool to see what we experienced.
But I seriously think there were kids there. We had kids over there. It's some sort of spirits of kids.
Yeah.
Does that make it a little bit creepier when they're the spirits of kids, or at least juveniles, children?
I think it does, but I think it's more just the horror movie thing. Like you get, when you hear kids giggling or something, there's something like they're supposed to be innocent about that, but you know, and then of course, in the paranormal world, people also say like, oh, if it's a kid voice or a kid laughing, it could be like a demon that's disguised as a kid. You know, we don't often like buy into that all the time. But, you know, just I think the kid voices are kind of creepy, especially when there's not supposed to be like kids anywhere in the building, when there was no history of it. Or then you wonder, like, who are these kids and where are they coming from?
Are they living in the walls, perhaps?
Oh, yes. You don't want that. You don't want anything living in the walls. That freaks me out.
But we should get some more information from the lady who actually let us in there, just to get a little bit more background information.
Yeah, we'll have to do some research for sure. Yeah. And then there's always the legends, too. Like, there was a crazy legend that the architect, like, jumped from the building and all that, you know, from the staircase, because there's this really cool spiral, like Victorian Gothic staircase, but that wasn't true. And so you kind of have to sift through a lot of folklore sometimes too, and just, you know, it's interesting to mention, but it's not true.
Yeah, that's important as well. Earlier you talked about, you know, this stuff really freaks us out. So I guess that's really kind of normal for you guys, going into a location and getting freaked out. But I always have to ask, is there any place you went to or anything that happened that you wouldn't do again because of that reason?
Not yet. Not myself. We've done somewhere there's been activity or there's been strange activity, or maybe not like, I wouldn't say negative, but just sort of tension or whatever. But I wouldn't say that we've, at this point, we haven't run out of a building screaming, luckily.
But I will say the English Inn a couple of years ago when we went
to the Ouija board.
I did not sleep that night. I had to have my lights on, and I don't think I would like to do that again ever. And I would never want to actually go into that same area, that same room too as well, because I ended up with a room that was already just very odd to begin with.
And you brought a Ouija board into that room?
Yeah, well, it's Gina's room.
Whose idea was that?
Oh, I wanted to bring it for the first time. So we were staying at this very old inn, and we thought, well, let's try the Ouija. And since then, we have tried it again at another Victorian mansion in town, where the place just actually allowed us to do a seance, like a full-on Victorian seance, which the Ouija boards and crystal balls and all that were used, you know, back in the day. So we kind of thought, well, we're in a Victorian mansion, so we kind of want to make it authentic and see if we get anything. So I don't know. I don't know if I believe that spirit boards are necessarily like negative or evil or any of that, but there's definitely, I think you bring a different element when you use that tool. Mm-hmm.
Was that the only time you guys have used a Ouija board and invest or a property?
Yeah, those two times.
And you kind of learned your lesson or what?
Oh, no, I'd do it again. But I think you just bring in a different element. I think it just feels different when you do it that way. It's, you know, not an electronic device, and it's sort of like more old fashioned. And I think you have to have the right group, like the right energy in the room to kind of manifest anything. If you
so,
want to call
Victoria,
it
that. Are you on board with that? If Gina wants to bring a Ouija board on the next one, you're saying that's okay, or
she can, but it always makes me a little nervous. And in a way, I have to say, I was glad the last time when we were at that Victorian mansion. I'm glad that other group ended up volunteering with Gina, because I was a bystander at the time, and that's good enough for me. I don't know. It kind of gives me a little bit of a heebie-jeebie there.
It gives you the willies?
No, it does. It does.
Well, if I don't know if we would consider the Ouija board a piece of equipment, but what gadgets and gadgets do you guys, do you gals, bring along with you? And what are some of the positives and negatives of relying on those devices, but also the benefits that they can bring and the evidence that they provide?
Well, I love my digital recorder. I have to say, I captured quite a lot of interesting things on that everywhere when we went, but yeah, I have to say sometimes you have to sort of take it with a grain of salt too, because sometimes also, you know, if you just rely on the recording, you sort of lose track of what you've actually been able to see or hear while you were there in person. But you have to make sure you actually review it right away, because there are moments too where I've put aside my recordings and then I wasn't quite sure what I was picking up on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I still love the recorder. We've got some good ones, I have to say, some good sounds and voices off of that one. So definitely I still like that one.
And I would say I do like all of our handheld stuff. We have the REM pods, mm-hmm. the EMFs and all that. You know, we've got a couple different little gadgety things like that. The downside is if there's a really active spot, your batteries die. And then you're just out of luck, because that has happened to us. We've been in a place where, you know, all your equipment or most of your equipment, whether it's video cameras or whatever, and it just all dies. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness, I've learned to bring batteries now. So I have a bag full of batteries that I could change out at the split second if anything dies, because that is a downside when you're all ready for the ghost hunt.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everything just starts dying on you and you've got nothing. And then you're like, oh, shoot.
In your experiences, have you found that there are aspects of the paranormal that really intersect?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, I think a lot of it kind of does. Like, there's just different things that sort of go hand in hand. I think you can't really have the paranormal without the historical, without the true crime. A lot of spiritual, I think, kind of, you know, goes into that. So, and whatever you want to pick and choose for your own tool bag, sort of to speak, you know, your metaphorical tool bag, like, you know, whatever you want to focus on or however you choose, like, you're going to communicate with spirits, if that's your goal, then, you know, all of those things are kind of that are all to be considered when you're doing research.
And Victoria, you're the one who mentioned Bigfoot before. So have you ever come face to face with a Bigfoot?
Oh, I know I have not, and I kind of wish I would, but I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't wish for that. But I would love to. I would love to, at a distance, maybe witness something. So Gina and I have been thinking about doing a little bit of Bigfoot hunting as well. So we haven't gotten around to it yet. We had so many other little events that we were doing, but definitely I think we'll have to go out to Pitt Lake, because that's
probably next year, right? Next spring, yeah. Maybe we want to go out. Yeah, you know, I don't know if that's the mystery about the Bigfoot and the Sasquatch, you know, or the Sasquatch.
Yeah, we haven't really figured them out as a species, right?
To know, yeah, like, do they hibernate? Do they, you know, because you in colder parts, you see, you know, Bigfoots that are sort of, you know, that are out in the cold, but do they do
all the,
you know,
Bigfoot festivals in the summer, and I've never seen a Bigfoot in the summer, so I'm thinking maybe during the summer is not the time to go Bigfoot,
maybe,
but
not.
I don't know,
maybe maybe spring, I don't know, maybe they are out in the winter, they've got a pretty good coat, so I'm sure they could be all right out there, but
but we should do the Harrison Hot Spring, because that just, yes, about 40 minutes, yeah, away from us. They've yeah, got a lot of Bigfoot sightings over there as well, but here in Pitt Meadows, there's a place called Pitt Lake, and that area supposedly is known to be as a migration route. So you never know. I would, mm-hmm, love to actually check that portion out over there, but we'll have to get there by boat. So that's the thing, yes, too.
Plus, there's, yeah, been UFO sightings too at the same time, which sort of, yeah, to me, then I have more of a, I wouldn't say that it lends more credence or it's more real, but I think, you know, a lot of times when people see Bigfoot or have Sasquatch encounters, you know, they also have some, you know, they also contemplate him being an alien or having something to do with alien ships, or and that those two events have been like repeatedly encountered there. So I think it's an area that's worth exploring. So we are pretty excited to go out and do a little bit, maybe more of a cryptid run next year.
Do you think that ghosts have the ability to come back as other beings, I guess, in the afterlife? So as, say, a Bigfoot or as an alien or any of these other species?
I personally don't think so. I think a ghost is like, if it's your part of whatever's left over, or, you know, if it's, I think ghosts are probably largely, I think, like a human entity, more or less, or whatever's left of the residual once you pass on.
You have any thoughts on that, Victoria?
Yeah, I probably would say the same. I mean, I didn't put too much thought into it before, but I have to say that I think probably, like, if there are some energies that are still residual at some point, and it was, I believe that probably ghosts are ghosts. They're actually from beings, I believe, like these energies. Yeah, I think that they probably are in that regard, probably.
Yeah, but I don't, like, ghosts be like humans or even animals, right? Because people see like ghost cats or dogs or
even animals.
Yeah,
I do believe in that. So yes, and I.
But
think
I don't think you can shapeshift as a ghost. Like you can't be like, you can't be a ghost one day and then all of a sudden be a, you know,
Bigfoot,
be an elemental or a Bigfoot. Yeah, no, I don't think it. And like, I don't know, if does a Bigfoot die and could a Bigfoot be a ghost? I don't know. That's a question that, you know, that got to ponder over my tea then later tonight.
Over a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so great having you both on here. Gina Armstrong, Victoria Vancik, the Haunted History BC Sisters and authors of the brand new paranormal magazine, Evenings and Avenues, Hauntings in the Outskirts. This is volume one of the Haunted History BC series. Where can folks pick that up and tell us about some of the kinds of locations that you report on as being haunted?
Oh, well, a lot of the items that are even in this book and that will continue to be in future volumes, they're all, of course, from documentations and histories from about our cemeteries here in British Columbia, also our museums, a lot of our heritage buildings as well. So it's like a whole combination of locations and even landscapes. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, there's a building, but even that area or region. So we focus on that as well. Haunted roads, whatever, like we're going to go and investigate everything.
And with our creatures, we've kind of gone across country. So we mentioned things like cryptids from Alberta, Northwest Territories, you know, just all different locations, and, you know, Eastern Canada. So we do have, do cover some other areas as well. So yeah, anything Canadian, there's a lot of ghosts up here. So we need to, you know, weed through them slowly and share them with everybody.
Gina and Victoria, thank you so much from Haunted History BC. Have a spooktacular Halloween, okay?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Enjoy.
Thank you so much.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night, everyone.